PhD, so I will present you some of the results of my PhD thesis. So why carbon stars? I work mainly on carbon stars for the following reasons. First, they are prominent as member of stellar population. So they are very important for even for galactic evolution. The dust formation process is rather well understood. And this means that the models are also advanced enough in this context. And also there are few data from interferometry, which is shown in this plot. So we have the number of entries versus the spectral type, and for carbon stars we have not so many observations. So yeah, let's write a proposal. This refers to an optical catalog. So those stars have atmospheres, which has been already mentioned. They are very, very complex. They are time dependent, and what was one of the aim of my PhD was to give constraints for the dynamic model atmospheres by comparing them with the observations. And one of the most powerful tools to do this is interferometry and optical, interferometry in general, but I work with optical interferometry because we really can investigate the stratification of the atmosphere. So in this figure, we can see the density profile, so density versus radius in stellar radii. The black line is the hydrostatic initial model, while the colored line represents different phases of the stellar pulsation. So while the hydrostatic model we can see mainly two differences. First, the hydrostatic model is not extended enough, so doesn't go through the whole atmosphere. And second, the dynamic model atmosphere can extend very far away. And second, the dynamic model atmosphere can help in reproduce the local density variation. So the shock fronts trigger by pulsation in the innermost part of the atmosphere and the dust shell moving outwards due to radiation pressure. So this is an image from Freitag and Hofner, but later we will have, I think, way much nicer movies on this that shows the pulsating stellar atmosphere that has complex large-scale structures. So yeah, I want to underline how we can see variation in the spatial and temporal. We can see spatial and temporal fluctuation in temperature, density, abundance, intensity distribution, and in the morphology of the spectrum. So we have radius here and phase. This image is taken from the Hofner et al. 2003, which is the main paper from where all this dynamic model come from. So we can see the pulsation in the atmosphere, which generate shock fronts. And if the condition of temperature and density are the right ones, so low enough temperature and high enough density, we eventually have dust formation, which may trigger a wind out of the atmosphere. So I use a grid of dynamic model atmosphere, which Sophie mentioned before, so Ericsson et al. 2014. This is a grid of 440 models, and each model is described by a series of time steps, which each time step represents a phase of the stellar pulsation. Each model is described by a series of parameters, which are luminosity, effective temperature, surface gravity, C ratio, and piston velocity amplitude. And what I did was an independent fit of the SCD and interferometry. We can see the parameter space of this grid in this figure, so which resemble an HR diagram, so luminosity versus effective temperature. The models may develop a wind in red, could be episodic, so they have mass loss and then they stop and then they start again, or they may have not wind, no wind. So, as I mentioned, interferometry is a very powerful tool for that. In particular, I work with MIDI, which is the mid-infrared interferometer instrument at the Very Large Telescope Interferometer. MIDI has two telescopes and work in the N-band, so between 8 and 13 micron. And the observable that you can get are visibilities, differential phase, and spectrum. Yeah, so this is MIDI here. Those are the four main UT at VLTI, and these are the ATs. And you can move the telescope along this slit to decide which baseline you use for your observations. Well, yeah, so interferometry works that you have a you have a source. The light arrives first to one telescope, then to the other. So you need a delay line to recombine the light. Oops, sorry. A delay line to recombine the light. And in the interferometric laboratory, you can observe fringes. So what do we measure? We observe the so-called fringes, and we measure a quantity, a complex quantity, which is called visibility. So the fringe visibility is the contrast between the fringes and can give us an information on the angular dimension of the object, while the phase is related to the location of the fringes and gives us an information on the symmetry or asymmetry of the object. We can see how powerful is interferometry in this picture. So I want to remark that this is a those are simulation. It's not real. Picture. On the left panel, we can see the real simulated image of a compact star and on a star which has a more extended atmosphere. In the middle panel, single dish observation, and in the right panel, interferometric observation. So we can see how really interferometry can help to resolve the atmosphere and to see through it. So what I first did was fitting the SCD and deriving a best fitting model described by a set of parameters. And then from this, I produced synthetic intensity profiles for all the time step of these models. And then from the Fourier transformation of the transform of the intensity profile, you can derive the visibilities. So profile and visibility were calculated for narrow and broad bed filters. And in this video, we can see how, really at different wavelengths, we can see different contribution from molecular and dust feature. So we can really go through the whole atmosphere. Yeah, so C2H2. Yeah, we have the bump because of the CO mission. Yep. So this is the sample of stars that I analyzed. RU Virginis, which is part of a paper of last year. And then a series of Myra and semi-regular and irregular stars, which are in the paper that I just submitted and in my PhD thesis. So what I did was collecting data from photometry, spectroscopy, and interferometry. This is a common output, a typical output of MIDI, so visibilities versus wavelength. And different color represent different baseline and projected angle. So we have the typical shape of a carbon-rich star going up around 9 to 10 micron, which is due to C2H2 and HCN. And then this SIC feature down around 11.4 micron. The same feature, you can see it in emission in the SCD. So flux versus wavelength, this is the SCD of RU Virginis. The ISO spectrum is in black. Different colors are different molecular and dust contribution. SIC and in orange, you can see the MIDI spectra overplotted. So concerning all the other stars, those are the results of the SCD fitting. We can see that actually the model fit pretty they model pretty good the data, but for some stars, some discrepancies remain at wavelengths shorter than 1 micron. And concerning interferometry, I don't have time to show you all the results, so I picked two stars. I picked two stars which are which show the most different behavior: ARLAP and WIPAV. They are also comparable because they are located more or less at the same distance. So in the upper panel, you can see the intensity profile, intensity versus radius, and in the lower panel, the visibility versus baseline, and these are two picked wavelengths. So the black line are the models, and we can see that while for ARLAP, and this is valid also for all the other MIRAs, the intensity profile are way extended. In WIPAV and also the other semi-regular and irregular star, they are way much more compact. We can see this also in the visibility versus baseline. Different color are different baseline configuration. The line is the model, the square are the observations. The one of ARLAP are way much lower than the one of WIPAV. This the same behavior we can see in the visibility spectra, so visibility versus wavelength, comparing more or less the same baseline of 50 meters. We can see that the visibility of WIPAV is way much higher, and this means that the star is more compact. So I also derived some stellar parameters from the models and from the observation. So at theta V minus K from Van Baer relation and bolometric luminosity, and from the geometrical fitting at 10 micron diameter. And then I put those in HR diagram. So observation are the full dots. Open star are the models, so Rosselan, temperature, and luminosity. Different colors are the different stars, and we can see that not only the models and the observation agree good within each other, but for those two stars, they also agree good with the evolutionary track from Padova, which are plotted for 1 and 2 solar masses. Different colors are different concentration of the CO ratio. So the predicted CO ratio and mass of the DMA agree good with the tracks. So in conclusion, the atmosphere are extended with the indication of shell-like stratification, which is larger in MIRAs than in semi-regular and irregular stars. The stellar parameters are in good agreement with the location on the evolutionary tracks. There still remain some discrepancies of short wavelength, but those are probably data-related. So I invite you to read you the paper when will be published. And as future perspective, I'm now working with models without the small particle limit assumption, which are also from Shell Ericsson, which probably could increase the agreement at short wavelength. With another PhD student, we brought an ALMA proposal on our Virginis, so finger crossed. And waiting for Matisse in 2019. So thank you, and I will be happy to answer your question.
Was it, maybe I missed it. So was it a general thing that you don't fit the semi-regulars as well as you fit the MIRAs?
No. It's not that they don't fit. It's in general the semi-regular and irregular stars show way much higher visibilities. Uh-huh. And probably, so first the model that fit them are way much more compact. So. Ah. Not as extended as for the MIRA, and also don't show the same shell-like stratification. And second, I mean, probably this is because the model at those for high visibility are not sensible enough. So probably this could be the reason why then they don't fit as good as for the Myra.
So you calculate the visibilities from the model, and then you fit that to your observations.
Yes.
And that gives you the stellar parameters from the model then, or what? Is there a degeneracy? Or do you have problems with it? Like, can you fit several models to the same data, or is it always like one, you find one model that fits perfectly, or?
No, not at all. So for each star, I fit the SCD. Mm-hmm. I fit the model to the SCD, then I derived one model, and for this model, I calculated the visibility, the synthetic visibilities, and then I fit this to my interferometric data. So for each star is different, this model.
Mm-hmm. And it's chosen from the SCD fitting and not from the visibilities.
Sorry?
So the model is chosen from the SCD fitting and not from fitting the visibilities.
No, it's just the computational time of fitting producing one.
It will be
huge. So you have to decide a criteria to how to produce the synthetic visibilities, and this was the.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks.
More questions?
So Matisse is going to observe in LM and N bands. So for the first time, we do interferometry in L and M band.
Yep.
What are you going to use in the LM and M band? Is that continuum, or are you going to look at line transitions?
Well, it depends on what you want to observe. But basically, the one of the main advantages of MIDI is that you can also obtain imaging, because it will work with three telescopes. So not only differential phases, but real phases, and we can try to reconstruct also images.
And Matisse on four telescopes, you mean?
Sorry?
Matisse will work on four telescopes.
Yes.
And even shorter wavelength, so to go to K-band with a new instrument called Gravity that observes in K-band. Have you looked at that, at the possibilities for your studies?
Yes. Actually, we are thinking about that for a future work, but yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You mentioned that the models and the theory agree very well, and you showed the HL diagram with the models of the Padova group. There were two stars up there that are not. What happens to these two? Can you tell us a little bit more about them?
You mean those? I don't know. Sorry. You mean those two?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are exactly the two. They fit good within within model and observations, within the error bars. I think they are just in a stage of evolution which doesn't fit the one or two solar masses. So
higher mass stars, probably.
Yeah, I didn't plot the three solar masses because it didn't make sense. But
why didn't make sense?
Well, because all the others lie here, and also because there was recently a paper from I think Oscar Straniero, and the second author is Thomas Lipsettler, which is one of the professors in our institute, which shows that basically all the AGB lie within the range up to two solar masses. And also I want to underline that those masses are the one on the TPAGB. So the tracks are calculated in this way.
Yeah, but theory is useful to constrain the models, and we have problems with the models, so
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.